look at God's word together. When was the last time you were on your own? Truly on your own, separated from any distractions. So I'm not talking about on your own with your phone. I'm not talking about on your own with Netflix going on. When was the last time you were just on your own in a quiet place, just for a bit of quiet? I wonder how do you like being on your own? I think some people really don't like being on their own. They find it difficult. It's certainly one of the perks of my role is that I can do that. I can get away. It's not easy, is it, to block off a block of time, half an hour, just to go and be quiet somewhere. It's very difficult to do that, but that's one of the perks that I have. But I wonder, is that something you do, something you haven't done in a while, something you enjoy, something you struggle with? We're going to look at this morning, how God is with us in the valley. I've left my clicker. Mike, would you mind? Thank you. Thank you so much. Do we have slides, Jebba? Thank you. Okay, we need to do our slides. Anyway, we are in week 3 of a series, an Advent series called God With Us. Okay, and we're looking at, you know, I think the bullseye of Christmas is that God came down to be with us in the flesh, Emmanuel, God with us. And so we're trying to explore that a little bit over these weeks. Now, we saw in week 1 how God is with us in the flesh. We looked at John 1. And we saw how that matters, because it means God knows what it's like to be one of us. He's experienced life as one of us. I think that's important. But also it means that we can understand what he is like. You know, we have seen, in seeing Jesus, we've got a glimpse into what God is like himself. And so the fact that Jesus came in the flesh makes relationship with him possible. Then last week, our second week in our series, Hafa looked at the theme of God with us in the valley. And he looked at Psalm 23, the Lord is my shepherd. And he explored how in the valley times of life, in those times of life where life is difficult, where life is hard, that God is with us there. Even especially he is with us there in those difficult times. And you may remember Hafa talked about how we pass through the valley of the shadow of death. It's not where we are to stay, but it is where we pass through, and that God is with us in that time. And he talked about, I remember, how shadows cannot ultimately hurt us. I thought that was a great reminder for us. And indeed, he talked about how where there are shadows, well, that must mean there's light somewhere creating those shadows. So even in those moments of shadow times, those times when we're on our own, we can know God is with us, even the shadow valley times of life. This morning, we're looking at another metaphor, I suppose, from the Bible that describes a stage of life, and that is the desert or the wilderness. Now, so we're going to spend just a few minutes exploring that idea, that God is with us in the desert, or God is with us in the wilderness. In the wilderness times of life. Now, what do we mean by wilderness times? What does that mean? Well, I think the wilderness or the desert is really, it's where we're on our own. It's where we're isolated, where we are quiet, where there are not other distractions around. A place where we can just be quiet. We're cut off from other people. We're alone with God. That's all we have, is a place of quietness. No distractions, phone off. That is, for me, desert time, wilderness time, time of being removed from all the busyness of life. And in our passage today from 1 Kings 19, we find the prophet, the great prophet Elijah, in the desert, in the wilderness. Now, Hafa read it for us, but the backstory, we need to understand a little bit of the backstory to understand why is Elijah in the desert. Well, Elijah has just single-handedly taken on 850 prophets of Baal and Asherah. He called for this big showdown. There was a lot of worship of Baal and Asherah in amongst the people, and Elijah called for this confrontation between him and these other prophets to see, well, which God is real? Is Baal real, or is the God of Jehovah real? And so he challenged the prophets of Baal and the prophets of Asherah to create an altar and put a bull on it, and he would do the same, and that they would call upon Baal and Asherah, their gods, to come and destroy and set fire to their sacrifice, and then he would do the same. And so he let the prophets of Baal and the prophets of Asherah go first. And you can read all about this in 1 Kings chapter 18. Well, the prophets of Baal, they spend the whole day shouting and chanting and calling out to their God, to Baal, oh Baal, oh great Baal, come and accept this sacrifice, come down in fire and burn up this sacrifice. And you can see Elijah's really enjoying himself, watching them fail miserably. And he sort of says to them, maybe Baal's asleep. Do you need to wake him up? Maybe that's why he hasn't come. And he says, maybe Baal's on the toilet, he says, in 1 Kings 18. Maybe you need to go and get him. Maybe he doesn't hear what you're saying. And so Elijah's really enjoying this, that the prophets of Baal, the prophets of Asherah, though they call upon their gods, nothing is happening. And they are being shown to be, that there is no god Baal, there is nothing to him. Now it is Elijah's turn, and he calls upon God to come and burn up the sacrifice. And boom, this big great fireball comes out of the sky and just decimates not just the bull, but the whole altar, just goes up in huge flames. And all the people are rolling around the around the ground saying, the Lord, he is God, the Lord, he is God. They recognize that Jehovah, the God of Israel, is the true God. And this prophet Baal, the God Baal and Asherah, that there's nothing to him. And Elijah calls for the prophets of Baal and Asherah to be killed. They're all killed. It's a stunning victory for Elijah. And he's just wiped the floor with the prophets of Baal and the prophets of Asherah. But immediately after his huge victory, Jezebel, the wife of the king, she calls for Elijah to be killed. And Elijah just falls apart. He just kind of collapses. He just kind of loses all confidence in himself, and he just kind of collapses and falls apart. Isn't that interesting? He's just taken on single-handedly 850 prophets of Baal and Asherah, and now, you know, the king's wife threatens him, and he's inconsolable. He just falls apart. He crumbles, and he runs away. He withdraws to the desert. I wonder if there isn't a principle here for us that, you know, these desert times often follow mountain times. Desert times often follow mountain times. I wonder, do you find that to be true in your life? One of the privileges of the role I'm in is I get to speak here at a Sunday morning. I often find one of the lowest times of my week is Sunday afternoon. You know, these desert times of lowness, very often follow times of being on a high and great victory. And I wonder, being brought low, is that where you find yourself today, maybe? Maybe you're in a place of feeling low this morning. I think many of us are quite spiritually exhausted these days. I think COVID and lockdown and all that has really taken its toll on us. A lot of us are feeling very, very low, struggling at the moment. Maybe a bit like Elijah, this feeling of I can't take it anymore, feeling of being overwhelmed, doing the best we can, and it just never seems to be enough. I think Elijah is in a bit of a place like that. He's done everything expected of him, and it's still not enough. The Jezebel is now after him, wants him dead, and he just crumbles. He says, I can't take anymore, and he runs off to the desert. Now, he isn't going to the desert to be with God. He's not going to spend a big, you know, time with God. He's just running away. He just needs to get away from all the stresses and the difficulties of life as he finds it at the moment. But God meets him in the desert, as Hafa just read. God meets him in the wilderness, in his isolation and his quiet. And we find Elijah, he tells his assistant to stay back, his servant to stay back, and he goes off on his own. He deliberately isolates himself and he heads off into the desert. But I love how God ministers to Elijah. I just love this passage because it shows us really what God is like when we are struggling. So let's explore that just for a few minutes. We're going to see that God is with Elijah in the desert place. Elijah's gone out into the desert. He's asked God to take his life. He's gone to sleep under this tree. He just curls up. He's had enough. He's exhibiting all the symptoms of someone under very severe stress, isn't he? If you look at the way he's behaving, he's exhausted. He has no zeal for life anymore. He's lost that spark for life. He sleeps other than just to take food, and then he goes back to sleep again. He's filled with fear. He's filled with dread. He's isolated himself. He's very much filled with self-pity. Verse 10, he says, I am the only one left. Now they're trying to kill me too. Things have got on top of Elijah, haven't they? I think we can clearly see that. And he has a very acute sense of his own failure. I'm no better than my ancestors, he says. But let's see how God restores his broken, exhausted, downhearted servant. First of all, God meets his immediate needs, doesn't he? He doesn't, you know, God doesn't demand answers or explanations from Elijah. He just meets Elijah where he's at. Elijah needs rest, he needs food, he needs water, he needs nourishment. And so God cooks. God cooks. God makes him some bread, prepares a meal for him and some water, wakes Elijah, lets him have this, and then says, Elijah, sleep some more. He tells Elijah to get some more sleep. Then he prepares some more food, and he gives him sympathy from a ministering angel. The angel of the Lord touches him, we read in 1 Kings 19, and kind of reflects Elijah's feelings back to him. You know, get up and eat. The journey's too much for you, Elijah. You know, that's how Elijah's feeling, and the angel reflects that back to him. Very sympathetic with him. There's no lecture. There's no accusation of, you're not trusting me enough. You know, what's wrong with you? There's none of that. There's no YouTube link to a great sermon that'll sort him out, you know, for where he's at. There's no Bible verse that will just fix him. God comes alongside him, gives him rest, gives him food, gives him water. Elijah really needed a duvet day, we might say today, and that's exactly what God gave him. And then God gives Elijah some space to kind of reflect on what's happened. He asks him, Elijah, what are you doing here in the desert? What are you doing here? Now, whenever God asks a question, it's not that he needs an answer. It's not like, you know, God comes across Elijah, oh, Elijah, what are you doing here? You know, he's not asking a question because he's surprised to find Elijah there. He's asking for Elijah's sake, to help Elijah reflect on what has brought me to this situation. Why am I here? He's asking questions of Elijah to draw him out, and he's giving Elijah space and time and an opportunity to reflect on what's going on. And he even allows Elijah to mouth off at him. I mean, Elijah's quite blunt with God, isn't he? He's kind of giving out to God. And God gives him space to do that. I mean, twice in this passage in 1 Kings 19, we see Elijah ranting at God. Verse 10, I've been very zealous for the Lord God Almighty. The Israelites have rejected your covenant, torn down your altars, and put your prophets to death with the sword. I'm the only one left, and now they're trying to kill me too. That's Elijah giving out to God. You know, how have you let this happen, God, on your watch? But God is so gentle with Elijah, isn't he? And there's a real model for us, I think, as people who come alongside those who are hurting. When people are low and exhausted, we shouldn't be too quick to come up with all the answers. Maybe we have to come alongside people to be there for them. No quick advice for how to get life sorted, but just to be with them. And so God is with us. Yes, he is perfect, he is holy, but he's not surprised when we don't do so well. God is not amazed at that and wow, I didn't think you'd be like that. God understands us. He made us. He knows what life is like for us. I think there's huge comfort for us in that because it means when we mess up, when we turn to God, we won't get blasted or, you know, God telling us to sort ourselves out. We won't get God waving his finger at us. We get gentle restoration. And, you know, we find this throughout the Bible time and time again. This is just one instance here of God ministering to someone in a desert place, in a place of quiet, in a place where they've withdrawn. This is just one example. But it shows us that God is with us in the desert places because he ministers to us there. He ministers to us in the places of quiet and isolation and being withdrawn from the busyness and distractions of life. Now, Jesus frequently withdrew by himself to quiet places. It's one of the things, if you look for it throughout the Gospels, you see it there all over the place. Jesus constantly, when life was difficult, he withdrew. He went off to a quiet place by himself. How are we looking, Jabba? Do we have a thumbs down? Okay. A few examples of where Jesus withdrew. First from Matthew 14. When Jesus had heard that John the Baptist had been beheaded, he withdrew by boat privately to a solitary place. So when Jesus learned that his cousin had died by beheading, Jesus withdrew. Mark 1:35, very early in the morning while it was still dark, Jesus got up, left the house, went off to a solitary place where he prayed. Mark 1:12, at once the Spirit sent Jesus out into the desert And he was in the desert 40 days being tempted by Satan. This is an interesting time here, isn't it, where Jesus withdraws to the desert, to the wilderness, to a place of isolation for 40 days. And at the end of that time, he's tested by the devil. There's an author I'm quite enjoying at the moment called John Mark Comer. And he wrote a book called The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry. It's quite a popular book out there at the moment. But he makes a very interesting observation, I think, about Jesus being in the desert for 40 days. He says he always thought it was quite unfair. You know, the time that Jesus, that the devil is tempting Jesus and testing him is after 40 days of Jesus being on his own out in the desert. He thinks, how unfair. But then he started to think, he reflected on this and he read around and he thought, maybe I've got this wrong. Maybe it's not unfair. What if the desert was actually a place of being spiritually empowered and filled? What if the desert is not a place of being brought low and being at your lowest ebb, but being with on your own with God, isolated with God, withdrawn from everything else, is actually a place of spiritual empowerment? And so maybe there's a sense that Jesus was being prepared for his confrontation with the devil. Comer writes, he says, the wilderness isn't the place of weakness. It's the place of strength. Jesus was led by the Spirit into the wilderness because it was there and only there that Jesus was at the height of his spiritual powers. It was only after a month and a half of prayer and fasting in the quiet place that he had the capacity to take on the devil himself and walk away unscathed. That's why over and over again you see Jesus come back to the eremos. Now, the eremos is kind of the Greek word, the biblical word for a quiet or a deserted place, the eremos. And we all need this, I suggest. We all need this quietness. We need this solitude. And this is not, you know, God forcing us to be on our own to punish us, but this is where we can best hear God. It's when we withdraw from all the distractions and the busyness of life and spend some time on our own, just with God. That is where we can best hear God. And I wonder sometimes if we don't take an eremos time to be quiet, will God not forcibly give us one? I think we've seen that on occasion. And I wonder, in some sense, for some of us, has COVID lockdown been that? It has forced us to be on our own, for some of us. I know for others it has meant a time of particular busyness. But what we've done is, how have we responded from, you know, increased time of being on our own during lockdown? Thank you. We have filled our minds with distractions. Here's one example from, thank you, Jebba, from the BBC website. Netflix gets 16 million new signups thanks to lockdown. That was in the first month and a half of lockdown. So when we were locked down, we'd less time to commute, less time to spend with friends, we had more time to be on our own. What did we do? Loads of us just signed up to Netflix, and look, I'm one of them. Here's from Forbes. COVID-19 pushes up internet use 70% and streaming more than 12%, first figures reveal. So our internet use has surged with all this extra time that many of us have had. And like I said, I hold my hand up here. I mean, I'm a binge of Netflix or an hour on Reddit. I mean, I do that. When I have space, more space than maybe I would have had before lockdown, I find myself filling my time with these distractions instead. Because it is easier, isn't it, to be distracted than to be quiet with God. To pick up our phone and start browsing the news. And then I finish RTE, I then go and I check The Independent, and then I check The Journal for the same news. We love to be distracted. Or I do, anyway. Maybe you're different. But it's so important for our souls, for us to stop for periods of time and to be quiet. And this solitude and quietness, we don't practice them for their own sake. It's not that silence and solitude and isolation heal us. God does that. God heals us. God restores our souls and restores us spiritually. But we struggle to hear him in all the noise and the distraction and the busyness of life. That's why we need to get away and sit with God and in the quietness, in the desert place. We need the desert place, really, to be able to hear from God clearly. And any book I've read on spiritual formation, it's a theme that's of interest to me during my master's, any book on spiritual formation, chapter one is always on the importance of solitude and silence and getting time alone with God in quietness. But it is so hard for us today, isn't it, with all the distractions that we have. And as we see in the story of God meeting Elijah, God speaks in a gentle whisper, doesn't he? He didn't come in the wind, he didn't come in the earthquake, he came in the gentle whisper. And it's so hard for us to hear the gentle whisper when we distract ourselves with all the noise that we tend to. So what can we do? What can we do? Just to finish up here. Well, I want to suggest we bring back the quiet time. Do you remember the quiet time? It was kind of more, I think it was really a 90s thing. I know a lot of us still practice it today, but during the 90s, I remember any camp you went on or any Christian union, it was always, how's your quiet time? Did you have a quiet time today? Are you having a quiet time tomorrow? The quiet time was this kind of block of time where you would be quiet and kind of do, you know, spend time with Jesus. Sit with God. You know, read a bit from the Bible. Talk to God about what's bothering you. Ask him for help with things. But often it's just sitting in the quietness with God, in companionship with him. It's saying to God, God, you're in charge. I'm not going to control this time. I'm going to be here, God. I'm just going to sit with you. So we don't have to make anything happen. But it's so important for our souls to schedule that time regularly where we just sit quietly with God and give God our undivided attention for a while. So can I encourage us to bring back the quiet time? Maybe to schedule some time over Christmas, over the next month or so, some eremos time to give our souls a rest and some quiet. Because the wilderness is a place of spiritual growth. That is where we can hear best from God. It's when we are quiet and our souls need it. Let me finish with this another quote from John Mark Comer. Can you click on for me there, Jebba, please? Thank you. No. Okay, let me read it for us. John Mark Comer says, here's to tomorrow morning, 6 o'clock, coffee. The chair by the window by the tree, time to breathe. A psalm, a story from the Gospels, hearing the Father's voice, pouring out my own, or just sitting, resting. Maybe I'll hear a word from God that will alter my destiny. Maybe I'll just process my anger over something that's bothering me. Maybe I'll feel my mind settle like untouched water. Maybe my mind will ricochet from thought to thought and never come to rest. If so, that's fine. I'll be back, same time tomorrow, starting my day in the quiet place. You? Emma's going to come and sing a beautiful solo for us about the story of amazing love. Let me just pray for us before we go there. Father, life is so full and so busy. The last thing we want is something else we have to do. Now I have to also have a quiet time. But Father, it is so important that we find time in our day somewhere just to sit with you. Father, help us to be aware, maybe in a new way, where we fill our lives with distractions. Make us aware of how we avoid sitting with you in the quiet. And Father, I pray you give us a new appreciation for the eremos, for the quiet time, because you are with us in the quiet times. It is there that we can best hear your voice. Help us with this, we pray. This is hard for us. We ask that you'd help us with it.